They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with David James, and I'm your host. Yeah. Well, folks, the world is gonzo. I mean, literally gonzo. I was just speaking with a fellow on the phone, and he was mentioning how his children, he encourages them to get a trade, which is a good thing. And I mentioned to him, yes, that's much better than going to the Marxist universities. And then he said, they don't really know what's going on. And then I said to him, well, yeah, it's a shame that you have to become, you know, in your 40s or 50s before you find out it's the Jews doing all this. And he says, hold on right there, brother. He says, hey, the Jews are God's chosen people, and nothing can change that in my mind. You know, and when I tried to talk to him about it, I said, hold on a second. I said, the Jews are not good. He said, no, brother. He said, no, that's, I'll never believe that. They're God's chosen people. They are. He'll never convince me of that, he said. And I'll never convince you. And he was getting all upset about it. Like as if he had a stake in the deal. You know what I mean? Like a dog in the fight, as my friend would say. I'm blown away by this type of a thing. Because he didn't even know, he didn't mind me saying that the college professors were Marxist, but he didn't link up communist with Jews. And this guy sounds like he'd be ready to kill for the idea that the Jews are God's chosen people. He said he doesn't want to know the truth, doesn't want to know anything. He didn't say it as the truth. He just says, I wouldn't change my mind no matter what. This is how screwed up our people are. And I don't know how they entrenched this in people's brains so heavily like this, but it's entrenched heavy. If you're listening to me now, you're a miracle. Really. Because many of our brothers and sisters are locked right into this. And I mean locked. There's no way that this guy will ever find the truth. I mean, anything's possible with the Father, but this guy's locked. Our race are under some kind of spell. There's no doubt about it. You know, I don't know if it's the delusion that the Father gives them, but they're locked up. And I pray for them, but I don't know what else you can do for them. They want to lose. Our people want to lose. They're doing everything they can to lose. They want to be defeated, and they're doing everything they can to be defeated. It doesn't seem like our people want to do anything right. Now, of course, there's some of us that are trying to, of course. But generally speaking, our race is one of the biggest proponents of the destruction of our race, knowingly or unknowingly. And it's very, very strange to me. It just is incredible. Because I never really cared about the Jews being God's chosen people. It just doesn't matter that much to me. I don't have a dog in the fight, so to speak, as I said before. My friend says that. I don't have a stake in that. This fella seems like it's his whole brain theology. It's like, it's definitely they are God's chosen people, no matter what anyone says. If a Jew told him they weren't God's chosen people, he wouldn't listen. If the Father in heaven came down and told him, he wouldn't listen. But anyway, I just thought you'd like to know that our people, I'm starting to wonder about our people in the sense of, can they be reached? I mean, I'm not trying to give you a defeatist attitude, but can they be reached? That's why I guess the remnant is going to be a small amount of people. And it's too bad it is that way. But you see, I won't waste saying anything. If I ever hear from that fellow again, I won't waste my voice at all. I see where it is. I see it's locked up. And there is no way there's going to be any key to unlock that. Only the Father could unlock such things. I suggest you pray for your brethren and our sisters as well, that the Father will somehow. I've been praying for the children. I've been praying for the people of South Africa. I've been praying that the Father would take the spell off our people. It's got to be black magic. It's got to be, or it's the Father's, you know, delusion that he put on them. Like I said before, I really don't know which it is, but I know it is. I want you to hear something very interesting. And, of course, the people that are against the numbers will be upset by this. The numbers, as Colin Flaherty says, the numbers. That's how they say it in Boston anyway, the numbers. Well, there was something that somebody was talking about, and the square and the compass, and I know a lot about what that means. I know that the square and compass of Freemasonry is the exact hexagram. It's the same thing as the hexagram on the Jewish flag. But listen to this. The square is 90 degrees. And the compass is 60 degrees. So when you see the compass and the square below it, you're seeing a virtual 69. Man and the devil. Only it's upside down this time. Usually the devil's on top and man is on the bottom. Because the compass represents the architect of the universe, and the square represents man. Or the female and the male too. Or the earth and the universe, or the female and the male as far as the compass is the lingam, the generative principle, the penis, and the compass is the female, the yoni. So you have a 69, which is also the yin and yang symbol. That is the symbol of the equality of good and evil. It's just like the Masonic trestle board of chess. But even on top of that, 666 is encoded into this Masonic symbol. And I'll show you how. You've got the 90 degrees, you drop the zero, that's nine. That's the devil's number I've been telling you about. But then with the compass, it's not only at 60 degrees, but the compass can go 360 degrees to draw a full circle. Three and six is nine. Nine and nine is 18, 666, encoded in this symbology in the same way it is encoded on the hexagram on the Israeli flag. Must understand that that is not commonly known by people. And you must understand that that shows you that Masonry is a Jewish proxy. So the difference of Masonry, which does buildings, Freemasonry liberates people. But not in the way you think. It's the wrong kind of liberty, remember? So I just wanted you to know that. And now I'm going to show you something else that connects some more dots that I have talked about. But this ought to tell you, you do know that Eustace Mullins is one of the greatest researchers in our time. This is from The Curse of Canaan, page 22. Please listen, because you see, they're trying to tell you, they're trying to lie to you and tell you that these Khazar Jews, Khazarian, are not real Jews. They're fake Jews. Yet I had told you that I guarantee you they're real Jews because they were merchants and there was not a farmer among them. I'm repeating myself, but for some of you new people, you'll understand what I'm saying. When they came into Germany, the Khazars, these Turco-Mongolian Jews, they call them Ashkenazim or Ashkenazi, Nazi in the end of it, Jews. And they say, oh, the Jews tried to play this game. I told you about Benjamin Friedman at the hotel in 1961, makes this great speech, but somebody cuts the end off of it because they don't want you to know what the real agenda is here. And I told you that the agenda is that 95% of Jewry are fake Jews, and they're not real Jews. They're Khazarian Jews that are fake. But the 5% are the real Jews, the good Jews, which you know is a bunch of crapola. And they're the real tribe of Judah. Well, neither of them are the tribe of Judah. And a Jew is a Jew is a Jew is a Jew. And here it is, right from the Curse of Canaan. Please pay attention. Neshab. The Canaanite political parties included the Pharisees, Sadducees, Zealots, Essenes, Assassins, Herodians, and Scribes. They were also divided into the Amorites, Hittites, Moabites, Midianites, Philistines, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, Sepharvaims, Perizzites, and affiliated tribes. Later, the Edomites descended from Esau, intermarried with the Turks, and became known as the Khazars, who eventually occupied present-day Israel. Did you hear that? That's why they're Turco-Mongolian. They're Mongolian. They're from Asia. and they mixed with the Turks, intermarried with the Turks, and became known as the Khazars. One little key here. Remember I told you how the Jews love to hide things by changing the spelling? Well, you know the spelling that you've always seen is K-H-A-Z-A-R-S, correct? But Eustace spells it here with C-H-A-Z-A-R-S. Let me just quickly do a search on the Khazars with a C, because we'd like to see what we can see. Oh, there's people that know how to spell it. There's YouTube channels and Patreon and all kinds of things, but nothing real here. It doesn't say anything about the Khazars. And it looks to me, let's see, that was with a Z. Let's try it with the S too. I just wanted to try it with that. Khazars. Yeah, so it says plural, Khazar or Khazars, also Khozars or Khazar or Khazars with a C. Now, I never heard of the Khozars. A people, Khazars, from the Jewish Encyclopedia, a people of Turkish origin whose life and history are interwoven with the very beginnings of the history of the Jews of Russia. Okay, so Eustace knows what he's talking about, right? The Khazars were a semi-nomadic Turkic people with a confederation of Turkic-speaking tribes that in the late 6th century CE, they're using this CE now, established a major commercial empire covering the southeastern section of modern European Russia. So, the trickery goes on. We do see that the Jewish encyclopedia tells us that these Turks are mixed with Jews, that these Khazars are Jews. So let it not be said any longer, this little thing has been dispelled. I told you it was dispelled before and that it was a hoax. But there's your proof that it was a hoax. There's your proof that the Ashkenazi Jews in Europe, the Khazarian Jews, with a K and a C, are Jews. They're not fake Jews. They're real Jews. And that should end that little aspect. I still can't get over how brainwashed our people are. I just cannot get over it. With a little research, anyone could find out that the Jews are causing all the problems of the world. So, let's go to the plot against the church where we ended off last week. And the paragraph that I ended it off with said, let it be borne in mind that among 17 million inhabitants of Prussia, there are only 600,000 Jews. Let it be borne in mind with what convulsive zeal this people of Oriental and irresponsible activity works to attain the overthrow of the state with all means, to occupy the higher teaching institutions, even by means of money, and to monopolize the government offices in its favor. Speaking of the Jews, they're Oriental. So, thus you get the term Turco-Mongolian. You understand? Carlyle, one of the most authoritative Freemasonic personages, says on page 86, the Freemasonry of the Grand Lodge is at present through and through Jewish. The Kreuz Zeitung, the principal organ of the Prussian conservatives, published from the 29th of June to 3rd of July, 1875, a series of articles in which it elaborated that the chief ministers in the German and Prussian government, not excluding Prince Bismarck, found themselves in the hands of the Jewish kings of the Borsay, and that the Jewish bankers were now those who in practice ruled Russia and Germany. I want to tell you that in 2011, in Austria, they changed the name of one of the places there to Judenberg. You know what Juden means, right? Jewish Berg. I just want you to know it. Look it up. Somebody visited my site from Judenberg. And then I looked it up and I was, Judenberg, very interesting. So, let the article, remember we're reading now from this book called The Plot Against the Church. It's a Catholic document. Nevertheless, there's some good truth in it. It may be from Babylon, and it's exposing Babylon, but it's got some truth in it. So it continues. These facts, and I'm on page 85. These facts, what facts are they talking about? That the Jewish bankers were those who in practice ruled Prussia and Germany. These facts caused the Jew Gutzau to assert the true founders of the new German Reich are the Jews. The Jews are the most advanced in all sciences, the press, the stage, and politics. I'm going to take a sip of my iced coffee. I'm going to read that for you again. Let that sink in. Listen again. I'm going to say it before I take my sip. The true founders of the new German Reich are the Jews. The Jews are the most advanced in all sciences, the press, the stage, and politics. In the time of Christ, these Pharisees, these Jew Pharisees and Sadducees, etc., Herod placed them. They were scientists, just like Rosicrucians were scientists, just like Frankenstein, that type of stuff. The Jews have always been involved in science. That's why I tell you science is at enmity with the Father in heaven. Of course, the press, they've always got control of the press, and the press includes not only newspapers, but books, any kind of printing, and now today it's all the news channels and the magazines, etc., etc., etc. Control over the sciences is control. It's man becoming God, man playing God, and man being destroyed by these scientists. The press is the control of the mind. I would say sciences can have an aspect of controlling the mind, but the press, maybe science is through pharmacology or, you know, pharmakia or, you know, sorcery. The sciences would include Freemasonry. It's both a science and a religion. The science of the soul is the Rosicrucians. So, you see that the sciences have a lot of control on the body, whereas the press are to work on the mind. Hollywood is also, movies, etc., etc. They're all to shape the mind and to put the spell on. The stage, which is Hollywood, the stage, which are plays, the stage, which all the world is a stage, and we are merely players, as it was said. The stage is all another place to shape the mind. And then politics, which shapes the body politic. It shapes the laws. All of these things move the laws, move the people's feelings, sway the herd one way or the other. It continues. Those are all my words. So, it continues. In the year 1860, M. Stamm wrote a book on this theme, in which he proves that the kingdom of all-embracing freedom on earth was founded by the Jews. See the word freedom. I'm going to say something I had said before that I had just found out about again. you have the word freedom, and I want you to notice that the word Edom is in the word freedom. You might have not noticed that. F-R-E, it's almost like fire, it's missing the I, and then Edom, red, the Jews, freedom. This word freedom was very important during Woodstock. They had Negroes on the stage talking about freedom, freedom. Free domination for the Jews. Freedom. Get it? Free domination. If you look at the word, you see Edom right there, plain as day. So it says, this fellow said that the kingdom of all embracing freedom on earth was founded by the Jews. In that same year, Samter published a long letter in the Volksblatt, in order, that's the people's bladder, people's paper. I don't know what the blatt means. In order to demonstrate that the Jews would very soon take up the place of the Christian nobility. The rule of the nobility was falling and will lose its place in this epoch of all enveloping light and of all embracing freedom to which we have drawn so near. Epoch. Let's look up the word epoch. Folks, do you like to do these studies with me? You know I love to do these with you. Epoch. A period of time in history or a person's life. Typically one marked by notable events or particular characteristics. The Victorian epoch, era, synonyms, era, age, period, time, eon, span. Geology, a division of time that is a subdivision of a period and itself subdivided into ages corresponding to the series in chronostratigraphy of the, this one's a tough one, wait till you hear this word. Chronostratigraphy. Boy, oh boy. So, it's a time. So this freedom thing is something that is pressed by democracy, which is the famous, the one world order's government for the Jews, for Jewish world domination. The democracy is the vehicle. And the enforcer of the vehicle is the central bank, as you well know, the one world money system and the one world religion. They all, I told you all the religions of the world have the devil as their god. So they all have that in common already, so it doesn't take much to bring them together. And that's exactly what they're doing at this point. This particular third world war that we're seeing right now, remember that Pike said at the end, the Christians would be left without compass. In other words, they would be looking for another religion. And of course, it's already ready there for them to pick. So it continues. Do you not understand, he writes, the true meaning of the promise which was given by, it says, the Lord Sabaoth to our father Abraham, the Lord God Sabaoth. Who's writing this again? This is a Samter, whoever he is, in the Volksblatt. You know I don't use the word Lord. You know it means Baal for the most part. But it says, do you not understand, he writes, the true meaning of the promise which was given by the Lord Sabaoth to our father Abraham? This promise, which will be fulfilled with certainty, namely that one day all the peoples of the earth will be subject to Israel. You see, this is a Jew quoting this. This isn't biblical. Do you believe that God referred to a universal monarchy with Israel as king? Oh, no. God scattered the Jews over the entire surface of the globe so that they should form a kind of leaven over all races, and in the end, as the chosen, which they are, extend their rulership over the former. You see the brainwash. You wonder why this fellow's freaked out and wants to kill over them being... He's not a Jew, but he wants to kill over them being... Oh, as a matter of fact, he told me he had a tattoo of the star that's on the Israeli flag on his arm. This is how much he loves the Jews. So this is what they believe. They believe that their God, which is Lucifer, not the Father, had told them that they will be promised to be rulers over the whole earth, and of course own all the possessions of the earth, including us cattle. So let's continue in the article. It is not likely that the terrible repression that the Christian peoples of Europe have suffered, who have been made poor through the usurers and the greed of the Jews and lament about this, so that the national wealth is accumulated in the hands of the great bankers, will be satisfied with isolated anti-Jewistic upheavals. The monarchies whose firm foundations are still not shattered through the Freemasonic hammer, and who ruling houses are still not the position of the ragged and barefoot Freemasons who have their eyes bound, will join together against this vile sect and destroy the ranks of the anarchists. Well, they shall not do that. They are the ones that will release the anarchists. I want to make you realize something that's very important. And it comes from this book, and maybe we'll get to it. I'm not going to read this whole book. But this term, anti-Semitism, which I don't use, I don't give any legitimacy to it because we are the Semitic people. However, there's something very unhealthy going on in the world, as you can see. And they've changed this. They've also brought the term called racism in as well. So that if you disagree with the Jews on any form, in any form or any fashion, or if you don't like them, or if you say something wrong about them, you're immediately called an anti-you-know-what. This is not healthy. We should not allow it. I've got an idea how to counteract it. But if you say something against the black people, now you're a racist. Well, my idea is this. And this would work with no problem at all. If anybody comes against us whites in any form or fashion or disagrees with us, we can be just as ridiculous and say, that's because you're anti-white. But really what I would say is, you're anti-light. Because we are the light of the world. And that means that you, who are anti-light, reside in darkness. So, I would also say to them, you hate white people, don't you? Anytime they said anything, called somebody a racist, all you do is counteract it with, you're anti-light. The white people are the light of the world. You must hate white people. You hate white people, huh? Don't you? And I guarantee that will put them back. There's an old saying and an old adage, if you want to call it that, that you should fight fire with fire. I guarantee this will work. Even against your white brothers that are anti-white, I would say to them the same thing. You're anti-light. You hate white people. If they called you a racist, if they called you a Nazi or any of these, you just say you're anti-light. The Bible tells us that we are the light of the world. We, the true Israel of the Bible. So you must be anti-light if you hate white people. You're anti-light. You're living in darkness. And light can have no fellowship with darkness, as we know. You hate white people, don't you? You hate white people, don't you? You hate white people, don't you? You're anti-light. Guaranteed it would work. This was an idea I had last night as I was thinking as I was going to sleep. Maybe the Father gave it to me, I'm not sure, but I'll give him the credit for it. I don't need the credit for it. But I'm telling you, it would work. Fight fire with fire. You're anti-light. You see, their technique is they don't want to use the term anti-Jewish because it would expose that the people would say, you're just being paranoid. You Jews are being paranoid. So they use the word anti-you-know-what that I won't use because of that reason. Just like racist. It doesn't identify who you're saying. You're just saying you're a racist. You're not saying, they've taught that to the black people. So basically, you're not saying, oh, you're anti-black. You hate black people, don't you? I'm telling you, you're anti-white. Anti-light is the term. Which means you hate white people, don't you? Because white people are the light of the earth. As Jesus told us to be, that we are the light of the earth. And the salt of the earth, which is white. You hate salt, don't you? You hate light. That's because you're living in darkness and pepper. And pepper's closer to the fire than salt is. Pepper burns. You sure you want to be anti-light? You hate white people, don't you? See what I mean? Believe me, if you say that to a white man, they'll freak out because it has to hit them heavy. You know, there are people out there that say, well, nobody gives us any solutions about it. I just gave you one. Use it. The article continues. Let's see how much time we have. I'm rolling right along here. Oh, we have time, plenty of time now. The article continues. Carlyle himself, a fanatical Freemason, horrified at the fate of mankind in the hands of the Jews, says, when the legislators busy themselves again with the secret societies, they would do well to make no exception in favor of Freemasonry. The privilege of secrecy is allowed to the Freemasons according to the law in England, France, Germany, and, according to our recognizing it, in most countries. The fact that all revolutions emanate from the depths of Freemasonry would be inexplicable, which means unexplainable, if we did not know that, with the present exception of Belgium, the ministries of all lands are found in the hands of leading Freemasons, thus fundamentally of the Jews. Like I told you, the Freemasons are ruled by the Jews. So they're the visible, whereas the Jews in the Illuminati, so to speak, the Jewilluminati, are really running Freemasonry. And these proxies answer to them. And you answer to these proxy Freemasons in the courts, in the police forces, etc., etc., etc. So it's the same old, you understand? Freemasonry is a proxy of the Jews. One of the most interesting proofs, the article continues, is undoubtedly that of the Freemason Haugwitz, who with inspector of the lodges of Prussia and Poland, he was the inspector, in the year 1777, he wrote his memoirs. This is what he wrote. Here's a quote. I took over the direction of the lodges in Prussia, Poland, and Russia. There I have gained the firm conviction that everything which has occurred since 1789 in France, in a word, the revolution, was at the same time not only arranged, but was also prepared by means of meetings, instructions, oath-taking, and signs, which leaves the intelligence in no doubt as to who thought it all out and directed it. Now, who took the oaths? The Bible tells us not to take oaths as white men, as the true Israel of the scriptures. We're not supposed to be taking oaths. So, of course, the Jew would say, oh, you need to take oaths. Or you need to drink blood. Or you need to spit on the cross and vow to destroy Christianity with us, Jews. So you see that there were meetings in secret, instructions from the Jews, oath-taking by the Freemasons, and signs, which I point out all the time. I just told you this time what the signs of the compass and the square are. And there's even more than I told you. These signs are all over the world. They're right in front of you. And they're for those who know what they mean, who can decipher them. It's a message to those who know, in the know, so to speak. Okay? Let's continue. As far as the murder of Louis the 16th is concerned, we likewise possess the evidence of the Jesuit Father Abel. In the year 1784, he declared, there took place in Frankfurt an extraordinary assembly of the Grand Eclectic Lodge. One of the members placed for discussion the condemning of Louis the 16th, the King of France, and Gustav the 3rd, the King of Sweden. This man was called Abel and was my grandfather. After this gathering, one of the participants, the Marquis de Vizieux, declared as follows, what can I say to you is that a finely spun and a most deep-reaching conspiracy has been instigated so that your religion and governments will succumb. In other words, to succumb means to give in. Now, it means more than that, but if you succumb to your injuries, it means you died, you expired, you gave in, you couldn't fight it any longer to stay alive. So he says again right here, what I can say to you is that a finely spun and a most deep-reaching conspiracy has been instigated so that your religion and governments will succumb. Another one, another quote. The existence of this conspiracy and its plan to murder the King of France and the King of Sweden are likewise confirmed by the greatest number of authors who have made serious investigations into the Freemasonry question, and the tragic events do the same. On the 21st of January, King Louis the 16th died, executed through the guillotine after a mock trial at which the majority of judges were Freemasons. A year later, King Gustav III of Sweden was murdered by Åkerström, a pupil of Concordet, in the same year the Emperor Leopold vanished in a mysterious manner. In order to live, next quote, in order to live, France must not sacrifice what is most rational in its existence. The philosophical, political, and social ideals of its predecessors of 1789. It must not extinguish the torch of its revolutionary spirit with which it has illuminated the world. The same speaker adds, the worst humiliation for France would occur if the work of the revolution were cursed. At least it should be possible to perpetuate it without the loss of its ideals. I want to make something before I continue. I want to comment about something here. The French people were once tall. And I forget the exact measurement that was cut off the average Frenchman. But because of the Napoleonic Wars, and you know who causes the wars, I forget what it is if the average Frenchman lost an inch or an inch and a half or something like that. You think about that dramatic effect on a nation. where the men of the nation, all the tall men of the nation, have been killed so that they could not reproduce. Therefore, now only shorter men could reproduce. Therefore, you just think of the consequences of that. I think it's pretty much self-revelatory. Let's continue. Another quote. One must never forget that it was the French Revolution which realized the principles of Freemasonry, which were prepared in our temples, said a speaker at the Congress of Freemasons in Brussels. In an assembly of the Lodge of Angers, which took place in 1922, one of the brothers proclaimed, "Freemasonry, which played the most important role in the year 1789, must be ready to supply its fighting groups for an always possible revolution." Its fighting groups. See, I told you that Freemasons are involved in Antifa. Do you need me to prove that to you? It just is proved right here. This fellow said it. "Freemasonry, which played the most important role in the year of 1789, must be ready to supply its fighting groups for an always possible revolution." Is there a revolution in the democracy of America? The left against the right? Of course the answer is yes. And of course Antifa is that fighting group. You must know that in Freemasonry, these people are captured, spiritually captured. They're locked in, like that fellow I told you about. They're locked. Very few will walk out of it. Just like walking out of the mafia, you walk out, you're dead. You're in for good. Like the CIA and the people that pretend, "Oh, I used to be in the CIA. I'm a former CIA." Yeah, 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 sure. "I'm a former Freemason." Yeah, uh-huh. The article continues. Not article, but the book continues. "Let us pass over the stage of participation of the Jews in revolutions in general. Already in the year 1648, the great revolutionary leader Cromwell was supported by the Jews. A deputation which came from the remotest Asia and was led by the rabbi Jacob ben Azazel." Interesting that Azazel is the goat. But here you have a compound word of Azazel and Bel, which is Baal. Azazel. Jacob ben Azazel appeared before the English dictator. The results of the conversations which took place were not long in coming, and Cromwell used his entire power in order to abolish the laws that placed restrictions upon Jews in England. One of the closet collaborators of Cromwell was the rabbi of Amsterdam, Manasseh ben Israel. Now, what happened with Napoleon? Sometime I'll read it to you. I wonder if I have time for that. Well, we have 10 minutes. Let me see if I can come up with this real quick. The reason is, it's very interesting. Yep, I've got it right here. I want you to see something that happened that you've never heard of, I bet. This is called Napoleon and the Jews, and I'm going to get to this eventually, but I want you to see what this is saying here, because very interesting propensity of Napoleon to be the same as Cromwell. Okay, let me read it from here, from the beginning. "Following in the wake of the Napoleon Wars, 1804 to 1815, in which Napoleon conquered much of Europe, came the emancipation of the Jews of Western Europe. For hundreds of years, the Jews had been economically and politically marginalized and physically confined to the ghettos of Europe, which is how they should have stayed. After Napoleon, the ghetto walls came down and the Jews of Western Europe were free to enter the European society for the first time. That was a big mistake. And that was the beginning of the Jacob's time of trouble. There's no doubt about it. This is when the yoke, as Isaac had talked about, would come off. Jacob's yoke would come off of Esau's neck. You can see that, can't you? For better or for worse, this represented one of the greatest periods of transformation for these Jewish communities. These new freedoms allowed the Jews of Europe to prosper and have tremendous impact on European society, but also led to a wave of secularization, assimilation, and even conversion to Christianity. Yeah. August 15th is the birthday of Napoleon. The following article written by Mr. Ben Weider, the president of the International Napoleonic Society, gives us much food for thought about anti-Jewishism, assimilation, and Jewish identity in the world today. One of the many contributions that Napoleon has made, listen carefully please, and perhaps his most important lasting one, was his civil code. This was written at a time in history when discrimination was rampant. It was then that Napoleon decided to liberate and offer liberty. Wrong kind of liberty. He was a Freemason. Equality and fraternity to the Jews. He was going to offer liberty, equality, and fraternity to the Jews. Protestants and Freemasons. You see now, Freemasonry as a proxy of the Jews ended up being the tool through Napoleon, who is also a Freemason. He puts his hand right in his shirt. That's his famous thing. The hidden hand of the Jews. So he said he also opened the churches that were closed for years. The civil code of 1804 was to grant religious freedom to all of them. At that time, there were about 480,000 Calvinists and 200 Lutherans living in France. In 1804, Napoleon arranged for the public regulation of the Protestant communities and then decided that the state would assume responsibility for the salaries of their pastors. Now, how did Napoleon's involvement with the Jews come about? Listen to the date. It started on the 9th of February, 9 times 2 is 18, 1797. When Napoleon occupied Ancona, a strange thing happened. He was amazed when he saw some people wearing yellow bonnets and armbands on which was the Star of David. He asked some of his officers why these people were wearing the bonnet and armbands and what was its purpose. When he was told they were Jews and that they had to be identified so that they could returned to the ghetto in the evening, he immediately gave an order that they should remove the yellow bonnet and armbands. He then authorized the closing of the ghetto and allowed the Jews to live wherever they wanted and to practice their religion openly. Why did Napoleon do this? Here is yet another incident of interest. On the 12th of June, 1798, when the French occupied Malta, he learned that the Jews were not permitted to practice their religion in a synagogue. He immediately gave them permission to build a synagogue. So we see that the Teflon rabbi told you that it was 1800 that Napoleon did this, but it says it was the 9th of February, 1797. It can't be both, ladies and gentlemen. So it says, why did Napoleon do this? Here is yet another incident of interest, right? So about the synagogue. So now is it says again, I ask, why did Napoleon do this? Now here's an amazing incident that is not generally known. When the French troops were in Palestine, and besieging the city of Acre, Napoleon had already prepared a proclamation making Palestine an independent Jewish state. He felt confident. Okay, that's, I'm going to have to go to this particular thing because it just cut it off at this point. What time do we have? Yeah, I don't have the time anyway. But we'll finish that next week, unless I can quickly find it real quick. The PDF just conveniently cut it off. Okay, let's see if I can find this little-known fact. Okay, just I'm going to finish the show with this. Now here is an amazing incident that is not generally known. When the French troops were in Palestine and besieging the city of Acre, Napoleon had already prepared a proclamation making Palestine an independent Jewish state. He felt confident that he could not occupy Acre, and the following days he would enter Jerusalem, and from Jerusalem he would issue this proclamation. He was unable to realize this project because of the intervention of the British. This proclamation was printed and dated on the 20th of April, 1799, but his unsuccessful attempt to capture Acre prevented it from being issued. The Jews had to wait about 150 years before their state was proclaimed. Napoleon's very, very into the Jews, ain't he? As I always do at the end of the show, I say, don't go down the wrong hole.
Just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste, all the lies that they told.